I feel if the world today turns its back to the poor, I think they are turning their back to Christ.
The voice of Blessed Mother Teresa of Calcutta, who dedicated her life to the poor, the sick and the dying.
The work is only a means to put our love for Christ into action. And so I had only to change the way of work, the means I had to change to work for the poorest of the poor. So my vocation was a continuation of belonging to Christ and being only His.
Founder of the Missionaries of Charity Order, Mother Teresa was one of the world's best known and loved religious figures. Throughout her long life, she was revered for her holiness and her compassion towards the poorest of the poor, and was often known as the Saint of the Gutters. She received numerous awards for her work, including the Nobel Peace Prize in 1979. Mother Teresa died exactly 15 years ago, at the age of 87. She was beatified in 2003. Mother Teresa was unstinting in her charity work on behalf of the poor in nations like India, but she also often voiced her concern about what she called the spiritual poverty of the richer Western world.
There is two kinds of poverty. We have the poverty of material, like for example, in some places like in India and Ethiopia and Yemen, other places, where the people are hungry for a loaf of bread, real hunger. But there is much deeper, much greater hunger, and that is the hunger for love, and that terrible loneliness and being unwanted, unloved, being abandoned by everybody.
In a talk she once gave, Mother Teresa gave this eloquent and moving description of her feelings after visiting an old people's home in England, where nobody lacked for material comforts, but what they did lack was something far more precious and elusive.
I visited a home, one of the best homes in England. Our sisters are there working. I have never seen so much wonderful things in a home like I saw in that home. And yet, there was not a single smile on the faces of those people. All these old people, they were all looking towards the door. And I asked the sister in charge, I said, sister, why are they like that? Why are they not smiling? I'm so used to see smiles on people's faces because I think smile generates smiles, just as love generates love. And then she said, this is every day like that. They're always waiting for somebody to come and visit them. The loneliness is eating them up. And for days after days, they keep on looking. Nobody turns up. That unwantedness is great poverty.
10 years after her death, a book containing a collection of Mother Teresa's letters was published that revealed for the first time the astonishing truth of how she spent many decades struggling with doubts about her faith and the existence of Jesus. Entitled Mother Teresa, Come Be My Light, the book was edited and compiled by Father Brian Koladechuk, a Missionaries of Charity father who worked closely with her for 20 years. He's also the postulator for her sainthood cause. Father Brian is convinced that these surprising revelations about Mother Teresa's spiritual darkness make her even more saintly and heroic. He sat down with me and began by describing what impact Mother Teresa had had on his own life.
St. John says, how can you say that you love God whom you don't see if you do not love your neighbor whom you see?
I first met Mother Teresa because my sister is also an MC sister. So the direct impact was I came to Rome and I had no idea joining. And so that the encounter was Mother Teresa inviting me to join. At that time, there was a group of contemplative brothers. And then after, in 1983, we began the Fathers. So I'd like to say Mother kind of fished both my sister and I out, so she got both of us to join. So the direct influence was actually Mother Teresa inviting me to join. But then through the years, just being close to her, watching her, learning, even that experience was already something very special and important. But I think even for like a further or more complete understanding and knowledge of Mother Teresa was being the postulator, putting all together. I remember when we finished the positio, you know, the study that we have to present to the Congregation for the Causes of Saints, I had my little piece of the pie. I had my experience, and other people had, you know, the sisters and the early sisters and different people had their kind of experience. But then when you put it all together and look at her life, say, ah, now this is Mother Teresa, which is kind of greater in depth.
Did she impress you straight away with her saintly qualities? I mean, for you, there was no question that this woman was a saint?
There was no question, because the first time I'd actually seen her was in Toronto, because I was studying in Toronto, and she came to speak, and I remember going to see her because she was already known. My sister already joined that year. So there was that first impression, and certainly someone who was very special, and then meeting her directly. But at the same time, you know, sometimes people ask me, well, how was Mother? And I say, well, if you didn't know what she looked like and you went to the convent and you were kind of wondering who's Mother Teresa, at first you may not pick her out, because in that sense she was very ordinary, feet on the ground. But then you would notice, say, the small things of, say, for example, you know, how she would make a sign of the cross, or how she would, say, take the holy water and entering the chapel, how she would make a genuflection, you know, with real attention and awareness or consciousness of what she was doing, not just routine. And so those little small things, she would be putting her love into those small things.
You've written two books about Mother Teresa since her death. And the first of those books, entitled Mother Teresa, Come Be My Light, this revealed for the first time to the outside world how she struggled for decades with doubts about her faith and the existence of God. I mean, these revelations came as a deep shock to many people who never thought for a moment she was a person with such inner spiritual torment. Did it really make people look at her in a very different way after this book was published?
Oh, for sure. I know people made comments, you know, but I think even, say, some people within the church even would have thought, well, she was wonderful. She was known for her generous work with the poor. But knowing that experience and then seeing that experience, interior experience, in the context of her whole life and what she was doing, then they said, oh, well, now there's really some depth to this woman. Because to actually go through that experience and doing all that she did and doing it joyfully, you know, putting everything together and seeing that position, that study, this is an heroic life or a heroic Christian life. But then the single most heroic aspect, I think, of Mother's life is that, what she called, that darkness.
You know, did she talk about it a lot?
No, she kept it completely hidden from even her closest sisters. There were a few priests who knew, because at the beginning, during the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, a little bit, then she was kind of getting help from a few very well-chosen Jesuits. But once she got a hang of what really the experience was, and then she was...
She took it in her stride.
She took it in her stride, and she knew it was like, you know, and just in a few words, on one hand, she was so closely united to Jesus in his suffering and that interior suffering. Because sometimes in her instructions, she would say, you know, I think Jesus suffered more in the garden than on the cross, thinking of that interior suffering. So she would say, I'm the spouse of Jesus crucified. So she was experiencing that union, paradoxically, being united with Jesus by experiencing non-union. And then the other thing she would always say, especially as she went out in the West, the greatest poverty in the world today is to be unloved, unwanted, uncared for. And that was her experience. So she was not just identified with in solidarity with the physical poor by living physically poor, but also that great spiritual poverty, especially in the West, that she was also living in identity with, and even in our Catholic understanding, for the sake of.
So when you yourself got to hear about this spiritual darkness that she struggled with, was it for you a surprise?
It was a surprise, because these letters came up because, thankfully, the Jesuits in Calcutta had saved them. So the sister who was involved in collecting the documents, she was in Calcutta, and then she was saying, okay, now here are these letters. So the first thing I did was I took them, because I knew they were very special and sacred. So I went to the chapel to read them. I didn't want to just read them as if they were some letters. They were so sacred in the sense of revealing that interior that she never wanted to speak of.
So it was.
It made an impact. When we were working in Calcutta, that first part of the cause, I would give a talk to the sisters, and I'd be reading from these letters, and the sisters were there. You know, some of them were crying because they're really, you know, the mother they knew, they loved, and then she's going to that, and it's really it makes an impact. So the way Mother expressed herself, you just feeling the anguish and what she was suffering.
You also, later, you wrote a second book in which you compiled many of Mother Teresa's speeches, letters and teachings over the course of her ministry. What was the core message you were trying to get across in this second book?
Well, you know, it was organized according to kind of just basic themes for our Christian life or spiritual life. You know, who is Jesus? Who is God? Obstacles. And then in the positive way, you know, her teaching on how to live some of the, you know, basic Christian attitudes and actions. So it was kind of a sense of really mother teacher, as a teacher, as she was a born teacher, as an excellent teacher.
And she had a universal message, right?
And the universal message, very plain, because she spoke in all kinds of different places. And she, in some things, she would even repeat herself. So it wasn't like every speech was new. But just her saying it and her person and the radiance that she did give of holiness made the impact. Very simple message. And I think the profundity of her message was hidden by her simplicity.
And what was this profundity of her
message? Well, I mean,
if you can sum it up.
Yeah. Her love of the Lord, her deep faith, because she had to have great faith to go through all of that darkness. And really to see Jesus in every person, to love him, to find the ways, ordinary things, small things. So she kept saying, you don't have to do extraordinary things. You don't have to go to Calcutta. Calcutta's everywhere, even in your own family. So small things, you know, because the value is not the actual action, but it's the love with which it is given. She's admirable, but she's also imitable in that sense.
And talking of admiration, of course, she elicited admiration, not just from those around her working most closely with her, but people all around the world, whatever their faith, including many mm-hmm. world mm-hmm. leaders, didn't she?
We were thinking, or I even asked some people, you know, it seems like not since St. Francis did someone have an influence way beyond the church like Mother Teresa. And it was quite phenomenal that, you know, God raised someone like her up in our time, in our century, and someone with the message that is also for our time.
Coming back to her character, she was often smiling, she was cheerful in manner. Did she also have a sense of humor? And if
oh,
so,
no,
could you give
did.
Us some
Oh,
you,
yes,
could
yes,
you give us
she
examples?
Did have a great sense of humor. She would tell a few jokes.
Can you give us
well,
some examples?
Well, I think the joke about the horse are going toward the cliff, and then they had gotten the kind of the words to say go, stop, or go ahead. It was like, thank God was the one to move ahead. So they're going, and then the fellow on the horse said, okay, stop. And so the password or the key word, and the horse stops, and then he says, ah, thanks be to God. And then the horse goes over because that was the word to go forward. So those kind of jokes she would like. And then she really had also a sense of humor in just seeing the funny things that happen. Say, like, among the sisters, something will happen, or they say the English. A lot of the sisters don't have English as a first language, so they'd make mistakes with the language, or funny things, you know, working with the people, there'd be humorous things. And so if you ever went, say, to like Mother House in Calcutta, they have the recreation in the evening, say, between 8:30 and 9 o'clock, and 300 women, young women, giggling, laughing, and shouting a bit. I mean, it really makes an impression.
She
was right in there, and yeah.
But above all, of course, it was her holiness and her compassion towards the poor, the poorest of the poor. Do you have any particular anecdotes of something she said or did in that regard that was especially memorable or inspirational for you?
Okay, well, I remember, just for an example, I think it was actually in Rome here in the airport. We were there, the sisters ourselves were waiting, were with her. The airport personnel would come in and greet her. She'd give her the miraculous medal. And then, okay, it was time to board. Everyone got up and we're all standing around. And then she saw a woman kind of behind the crowd, kind of standing back a little bit, looking sad. So that's how observant she was. She picked that up. And she went to that woman to greet her and just to make her feel important or say a little word or a message. So that even in the midst of the crowd, she would have that attention to those small things. Or another example, also in Rome, there was a special mass. It was all the reporters, even during as she received communion, they were just all around her. It was quite not very edifying. And then at the end, so the mass is over, the procession out of the church, and then she was the only one who really stopped and turned around and made a genuflection to the Blessed Sacrament, which is on the side, not in the sanctuary of the church, but on the side altar. But I remember being so impressed that among all those things and people around, she knew exactly where the tabernacle was, where Jesus was. So that is a couple little examples of that attentiveness and observing and looking. And then also that personal love for Jesus. She made that little act of faith before leaving.
And if you had to sum up in a sentence or two her greatest legacy, her greatest gifts, what would they be for you?
Well, I think especially in our age, you know, she would say, a lot of people are saying there is no God. And then she was saying, but our work shows that God is. Okay, so there's a sense of the testimony that our world, even though all what it is, and technology and science and all those things, yet the work shows that God is. And then the second thing is her life is not imitable. We can't imitate it in a sense. Everyone's not called to go to Calcutta, but we can do those small things. You would say, for example, a smile, just a smile to someone else. Maybe give flowers, or maybe go and read the newspaper. Maybe someone needs help shopping or helping someone across the street. All those little things, if you're attentive, like, you know, she would notice these chances. She would say, well, grab the chance. These small things that are every day right around us, if we, you know, she'd say, if we have eyes to see.
I was speaking to Father Brian Kolodejczuk, author of two books about Mother Teresa and the postulator for her sainthood cause.
Unwanted, unloved, a trophy of society, are we there to be that love, that kindness, that thoughtfulness to them?